Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Kobe White, by the way, with back-to-back 30-point games. As we mentioned, the first Bulls rookie to do so since MJ in 84-85. And the first Bull reserve to have back-to-back 30-point games since Quentin Daly. And that was, what, 84?
January of 84.
Middays on the Score.
A Quentin Daly reference. I am here for it.
Yeah, it's an outstanding performance for the young man, especially when they just ask him to score and not really complicate anything. Bernstein and McKnight, that was Bulls basketball that you heard right here on your home for Bulls basketball, Sports Radio 670 The Score. But even after a win, they were chanting fire Garpax.
Yeah, the post-game show with Jason and Kendall and Will had that going on in the background. It wasn't as, I don't know, visceral as the first take stuff when Zach was on the desk and everybody was sitting there on Navy Pier for All-Star Weekend. It didn't feel like as mean. It felt like some fans who had heard that happen and thought, oh, this would be funny if we also did that. But what has been a topic of conversation really all season long has been Jim Boylan's usage of timeouts. And we're back to this conversation yet again. I mean, it started out as something that was just kind of funny and like, oh, what are you doing there, Jim? And then it gets to a point where our guy, Cody Westerlund, asks him a question about whether or not he's using them properly and why he didn't use this one here but did use that one there. And then Jim apparently froze up so much that while Daniel Gafford was lying basically helpless and motionless on the floor in a game against Rick Carlisle, Rick's got to take the timeout to protect Daniel Gafford from everything going on because Jim Boylan was too frozen up to take a timeout there. So it has become a topic of conversation here. So much that Zach LaVine and Jim Boylan had a heart-to-heart after another timeout, this one taken against the Phoenix Suns, a loss to the Phoenix Suns that are eighth in a row, where, again, trailing with no reason to be doing anything, Jim calls a timeout in order to work some things over. Boylan was asked about yet another late game out of it timeout.
But the reason he was asked about it was because TV cameras caught LaVine's reaction to it.
Correct.
As they come out of timeout, he's talking to somebody, whether on his team or on the other team, and he says, and it's clear when you read his lips, why are we taking a timeout down effing 10?
Right. So the two of them apparently had to come to Jesus meeting, where I'm sure things written across the chest were discussed and whether or not their things were on a heart or off a heart. Probably a little bit of mutiny talked about, too.
Just a little.
But Boylan was asked about the timeouts here, and Zach LaVine will have a response.
Jim, you've been very consistent with your explanation of the late-game timeouts you've taken, talking about coaching to the very end of the game. What specifically were you trying to accomplish with that one you called with 30 seconds left?
We were just trying to get a three, execute something we've been working on, an action that we've been working on. And I thought their pressure on our inbounds hurt us. I think it hurt us all night. Their length and athleticism on the side out of bounds hurt us. And we had a hard time getting the ball into actions. We turned it over in the first half, too, on the side out of bounds after timeout. So
my question is more about the mood of the team as opposed to the game tonight. Zach has been caught on camera twice now expressing some frustration at your late game timeouts when the game is seemingly over. Is it worth the risk to continue to do that in a season that's been filled? 8 straight losses, you guys haven't played up to standards, all these injuries. Is it worth continuing to do that if it seems like it's now agitating your own guys?
He hasn't said a word to me about it agitating him. I don't know if you're reading his mind on that or you're just making that assumption that that's what he's upset about. He hasn't said a word to me about it. So he's very respectful about me coaching the team and me trying to help the team. So you have to ask him.
If it is agitating, guys, do you feel like it's worth it to continue to do it?
I think it is agitating, guys. Yeah. You'll have to ask him. Yeah, I'm sure you will. Yeah. JoJo, anything?
No.
Cowley's like,
oh, Clip didn't say that at the end.
JoJo's always referring to Cowley. Cowley's like, oh,
I'm done with that. That's all. I'm set there. Thank you.
The reason why Zach LaVine hasn't said anything to you yet at the time of that question is he doesn't care what you think.
Doesn't feel that way.
I mean, this is just a clown show at this point. This is so dumb. This has gone so far past dumb.
It's player perception, and it's other players' perception. That matters to me most.
The league perception.
That's what I'm talking about. Other players, the league, front offices around, taking a look from the outside. You got an opening, apparently. The Bulls want to create an opening in that front office. They are pushing people aside so that they can bring in, well, I'd love to say the best and brightest, but I don't know that that's going to be the case given the caveats that are going to be on this next job opening. I don't know that it's going to be the best and brightest to come in and reshape the Bulls and figure out where you go from here and hopefully get a coach in that's not willing to take the timeouts than Jim Boylan is. Apparently, the two of them, Zach LaVine and Jim Boylan, had a conversation. They talked about those timeouts. They talked about the frustration that exists during an 8-game losing streak at the end of an 8-game losing streak as well. LaVine was asked about that sit down with Jim Boylan.
Zach, the TV cameras seemed to pick you up kind of agitated by a timeout. And then obviously we couldn't help but notice Jim pull you back there. You guys have to iron some things out. You guys okay?
Yeah, no, we're good. You know, it just gets frustrating when you're not winning. I think everybody gets frustrated. And, you know.
So every time we shot it,
I just wish we were, you know, I wish we were in the game, you know, at the end of the games. And you know, obviously, we've lost 9 in a row, so I don't want to be a winner. It's just, it gets tough when you start losing.
Was Jim upset?
Nah, we were just talking about some things throughout the game, some stuff I didn't like, and then some stuff that, you know, what happened throughout the games, and you know, player coach things that we just talk about every once in a while.
We've asked him several times about those late game timeouts. They're pretty unconventional. He's unapologetic about
that's
them.
That's what he do, man. That's what he do. You know, I don't have to tell you. I'm not the coach, so you know. I think you know. Ouch. He's told me he likes working on things that you know we do in practice and things like that. So, yeah, coach, he can you know he can call a timeout if he wants to.
Zach, what does that feel like though in a season like this? Is it frustrating that losses that are out of hand at that point are being extended? What are you feeling in that moment?
I just told Casey, I just wish we were in the game. You know, we played a really good game throughout the whole game, and then we lose control. So it's just frustrating, you know, when you know at the end, like, obviously, you never know what can happen type thing, but, you know, you're down by 10 with 30 seconds left. It's tough to, you know, stay locked in at the end of that.
One of the big storylines just here in Chicago is about how free let's haven't come here, haven't signed here. How much does something like that from the head coach weigh? How much do players talk about things like that amongst themselves around the league?
I mean, I think first and foremost, the team, they want to come to a winning team. You know, if a coach is doing that and you're winning, I don't think players really give a damn. I think the main thing is, you know, we got to be a winning team for players to come here. Timeout situation, I don't know what other players think, man. It's just, it is what it is right now.
You mentioned you guys talked about some things you thought were wrong or do better. What were those things that you expressed to him that you didn't like
necessarily? I mean, we got to get more organized in the fourth. Like sometimes we call a play and dudes are on the wrong page. And then you have to get, you know, you get forced into something that you don't want to if it's a bad play or a bad shot. And, you know, you got to do something. But, you know, it's easier when you're organized at the end of games. And that's what, you know, it's tough. We got dudes that haven't played out there for a while and things like that. So it's just where we're at.
Well,
He's laughing in his coach's face.
That's less than a ringing endorsement. I'll give you that.
Come on. How about Darnell Mayberry doing work, by the way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Some of his line of questioning is just, I mean, it's just putting it right there. But the laugh, it's what he do. I mean, what do you want him to do? He's head coach. He's going to do what he do.
He gets to do what he wants to do.
he's literally
and
laughing.
It's frustrating the hell out of me.
I'm going to tell you, I'm not the coach.
That's your supposed star player laughing, literally laughing at his coach. And that's after the coach defiantly, you're assuming that. You're assuming if you read his mind. No, reading his lips.
He's never said anything like that
to
me.
You can tell what he says. The last time he's like, why are we calling a timeout? Why? So we saw that. And then just two nights ago, you can see him. It's obvious what he's saying. It's not reading minds. He comes out of the timeout. I was like, why are we calling a timeout down F-10? And do the math on that. Even if you get takes a 0.7 seconds, you get a quick three, splash, you're still down, what, 3 scores in, mm-hmm. in 8 seconds? Come on.
It's doable. They
Come
did it
on.
Against Charlotte earlier in the year. I was doing the pre and post for that. It was a ton of fun watching Zach hit all those three-pointers.
The best part was Jim referencing that not long ago.
Oh, of course it was. Yeah, because that's a repeatable thing. I mean, as amazing as that was for Zach to get done, that is not a repeatable, gameable effort.
How about
That's not
doubling
a thing you plan.
Down? How about Jim Boylan doubling down on it, though? He's like, yeah, I'm going to continue to do this. And John Paxson tells me, keep doing what you do. This is what I do. You're saying this is what you do, and everybody's making fun of you for doing it.
Yes.
Because you still do it, and then you're like, I don't know if he's trolling or if he thinks that he's going to actually come out. Like, you know, when all was said and done, there was a method to that madness, and everybody learned exactly
right.
why he was doing things. Right? Everybody all around basketball thought he was an idiot.
What does the team look like that comes to play for the Bulls as they're constructed right now with the lessons that Jim Boylan's trying to teach? Which guys are willingly going, yes, that is the way.
Adam Makoka.
That I want this basketball to be played.
One of these was a time, remember, one of these was he had to teach Adam Makoka.
That's right. That's right, he did. Adam played a little bit last night, and I'm not... It's a nice effort by the young man. Anyway... What does this team look like? Who is it that is voluntarily signing up to come over and play for the Bulls because these are the lessons that get taught? Because this is what's written across the chest. Name for me those names. I'd love to know. I'll tell you this too. I've really enjoyed watching Coby White this year. The struggles and everything. And I defer to you, the basketball brains on the show, Dan and Rick. I like the idea of letting him play as many minutes as humanly possible in these last 25 games now. I'm fine with that. But the start or don't start Coby White discussion is a strange one to me because of the injury situation that still exists with this team. I mean, you're still looking at getting as many guys healthy back as you can. So if you're going to throw him in with whoever... I just kind of feel like the start or not start isn't the conversation. It's just the quantity of minutes. At least that's how I feel looking from my seat.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree that it's, I don't care near as much about starting as closing. And that could depend on the given game. But yeah, he should be getting minutes with the best players on the team, whether it's starting the game, whether it's in a second run where there's some overlap, where
right.
he would be the last of the reserves to come off the court before the half, something along those lines. Yeah, he should be getting a good amount of minutes with Zach LaVine in the backcourt. See if those two guys can work together as a backcourt with maybe Satoransky at the three, depending on, everybody else and when they come back and how much they're actually able to play and minutes restrictions, whatever, on a guy like Otto Porter. But I think you do need to do that. So sure, I'd be perfectly fine if he started, especially now with Otto Porter not playing. You just have Satoransky functionally play the three and do it that way. That's fine. But I also do understand them saying, hey, even for now, he does provide a serious role for scoring off the bench, which they also need.
There's two things that I'm looking at that are important regarding Coby White, and I keep asking the same question, and it's whether or not you actually think he's a point guard or whether you think he is a scorer, whether you envision him as a Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams type who could be sixth man of the year, second unit scorer, what Ben Gordon did. Is that what he is? Or are you going to teach him to try to run a team, to understand situation, to keep bad shot takers from taking bad shots? That's one. And do you just want to invest your time and resources and effort into teaching him how to run a team? Or do you just want to say, get yours?
Yeah.
Let everything feed off of your ability to score first. Second of all, can he coexist on the floor with Zach LaVine at the same time? That's what we need to see in a large sample.
He did a little last night.
A little, but that's your beginning of a long-term experiment. Does it devolve into turn-taking, and how does that affect the way you coach him? Because if you say, hey, man, don't worry about it. Don't worry about who's where all the time. Feel the floor. Feel the game. Try to get yours. When Zach is trying to do the same thing,
yeah,
it might not be sustainable. It might not be tenable.
Which is harder in your mind? For Kobe White right now? Well, not – I was going to say for Kobe White right now. But I guess given that there's 25 games left and the injury situation is what it is for the Bulls, let's say over the next year and 25 games of basketball.
I think a young NBA point guard maturing into a mature NBA point guard is inherently more difficult. You can coach some of the other stuff. You can personnel group your way to the other stuff. But getting your computer calibrated properly for what basketball looks and feels like and the pace at which it runs, understanding matchups. You know, when you watch LeBron James play and you watch and you see him say, okay, you're putting in this guy, this guy, this guy, and immediately he'll point to a spot on the floor because he's three moves ahead.
Yeah.
And he knows that you're setting a down screen on the opposite side that's going to free him up, that's going to time his roll to the basket, that where when in the chess game, Kobe White, it's everything is just still a blur to him.
I guess I'm glad, though, that the season, as messed up as it has been, doesn't feel like it's going to be a completely wasted one when it comes to Kobe White's development. It's not going to be Mitch Trubisky with John Fox in that first year. It might not be a whole lot more than that in terms of his getting to a point where he's playing that slowed down, more veteran point guard spot. But if these next 25 games are used the way that Rick was talking about, the way that I was talking about, the way that you're talking about, with just that quantity of minutes played with the best players available to Jim Boylan on that night, then it feels like you've got something that you can... Maybe rescue is too strong a term considering how bad the season's been. But something that you can rescue from the seventh overall pick.
Not with this guy coaching.
You know what I mean? But right. That can't change.
It all feels, sure, of course it can. It could change right damn now.
We're talking in the real world, though, Dan. Yeah.
It all feels like a complete waste of time. With every next game that this guy coaches, you're still delaying whoever your important players are.
The thing is, you can't just ignore the fact that he could be... I don't necessarily know if I think he's going to be a point guard, but to not try and teach him any point guard skills is idiotic and moronic from any front office or coaching staff, because the thing is, whether he's a point guard or more of a combo guard, he's going to need those skills.
Right.
You need to try and develop some playmaking with him, because if you look at any rookie point guard in year one, like at this point of year one, and you say, well, he definitely can't do a lot of this, I think you're a really short-sighted executive that shouldn't have a job, because rookie point guards are really bad.
They are bad. I mean, but on a functional team, on a really functional team, mm-hmm. every game, every practice, there is an assistant, ideally a former point guard. There is an assistant who is got this guy as his project. It is his job every day to say, here's a ball screen. Here's a ball screen at this angle. Here's where the defenders could come from. Tell me what you're thinking. What do you see? It's like Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah.
You know, what do you see? What do you see? What do you see? It's very much like teaching a quarterback. And if when you go to games early enough, when you go to NBA games and you're there 3 hours ahead of time, you're there when the buses get there, you will see guys quick out of the locker room, end of bench players on a good team. Right out of the locker room, and there is an assistant saying, let's go, here we go, here we go. And they got a ball rack for the shooters, or they've got for the guy working with big men has got the foam rubber paddles that he's using to beat a guy up. And you watch Quinn Snyder work with Dennis Schroeder, who he had no idea how to play basketball. But Quinn Snyder, his whole job for an entire season was just to break this guy down and build him back up and teach him how to be an NBA point guard. And I don't know if the Bulls function in that regard. I don't know if they've got a guy every single day. What do you see? What do you see? What does this look like? What's this defense? Who's coming here if they show you this? Where are you going with the ball?
Well, right, but you just said, you didn't say should they try this and do the Bulls have the people to pull it off? You said, should they try this? The answer is absolutely yes, you should try and open up his vision, because he has his moments where he gets by his guy, either on pick and roll or whatever, and he, if it's not right there for him, he can hit a guy in the corner when the guy's there. You've still seen a couple times, too, where, like, that's why we talk, you know, like I mentioned before, like all the different variables, and there's not many constants on this team, especially right now, because there's a bunch of bums out there playing with him, especially on the second unit, where there are times where he's trying to hit nice passes to where, in theory, if you had all your guys, like Otto Porter can't do a ton, but when it comes to moving on the perimeter based on where everybody else is
going, he knows how to find open space. Yeah.
He knows how to find the open space, and Coby White's been missing that in his minutes. So if when Otto Porter comes back, you say, you know what, that with that, with more of those types of guys, you want to see him play with the best players so that he has a better idea of where guys are going to be. 100% here for that, because like I said, these games don't matter, so you might as well at least try and give him some of that, because the scoring is so second nature to him.
Yeah.
I don't think by trying to focus on some of his,
you're not going
to
take
skills,
away that
exactly
like they did with Wendell Carter Jr.
Right. I heard an interesting
stop shooting Wendell really
this weekend for him of Jeff Teague could be an interesting comp for him of a more
he's,
of a score first
quicker.
Type guy.
He's quicker than Jeff Teague.
Yeah, not quite as big a body yet, but score first type guy. Probably never going to be an all-star, but a guy who can put up some points for you, who can get you into sets. And is probably tops out as like a, you know, like top 10 point guard.
Now, to make your point about the pieces around you and how that can limit your developmental ceiling at any given time, basketball vision, the difference between guys who see the floor, we use that when I say see the floor, it's more feel the floor, because anybody can see what they can see. But when you watch Luka Doncic, look at how many passes he makes because of trust, because he doesn't see it. Like a quarterback throwing to a space, throwing to where the guy's going to be. Watch Doncic. Watch the really good playmakers when they know, because it's what must be true because of what you can't see. That's what I'm talking about with LeBron, where there's a pocket pass or there's a whip out or there's just like a little. Denver does so much of this stuff too, where I can see because I know you're here, here, and here. Someone else has got to be here. That's a hockey thing too.
It's fighter pilot stuff.
Fighter pilot stuff, and it's big in hockey. When you watch hockey offense, if F1 is here and F2 is here, that means if F3 is coming, I can just lay this puck out here, and here he comes. And that's vision. It's knowing, it's trusting because of what you see. Where are the things at that moment you can't see?
And that's part of the reason that I thought the Atlanta Hawks being bad was one of the easiest like bets of the year when you looked at some of the teams people were saying maybe for a playoff team. It never made sense to me because they have so many young guys, even if they were lottery picks. Like Trey Young knows what he's doing and he has great vision, but DeAndre Hunter's learning where he's supposed to be. Yeah. Cam Reddish is learning where he's supposed to be. And beyond the fact that none of these guys know what the hell they're doing on defense, they pretty much don't know that half of the court exists. Even on offense, they're still all trying to find their spots. So there are moments where you'll see Trey Young dime up a guy who cuts baseline, but it's still rough because they have so many young guys are all trying to figure out themselves. That's why you see the value in some teams bringing in veterans like the
Hawks.
That
was the Thad Young move.
Well, that was the Otto Porter trade. That was the Thad Young move. That's the Hawks trading for Clint Capella to give them just something that they know exactly what it is.
A non-variable.
Yes.
Yeah. When you have that many variables, you can't determine the value of all the variables.
I know at some point it's essentially damning with faint praise, but I look at the Coby Young situation, a Coby White situation over the last 25 games, and I'm thinking, okay, there's something that can be rescued from this horrible, horrible year. And I don't think that changes how Bulls fans will think about the 2019-2020 season. I don't think that changes overall your up or down grade on a year like this, but it is nice to see that there's something that can be brought out of all this nonsense, and it's just in his hands. It's in Jim Boylan's hands.
Great.
To give him, yeah, I hate
stop,
that too.
Stop reminding
to
me.
Give him the minutes And the ability to learn those kind of things on the floor with the right people.
This segment is sponsored by Nutrisystem for Men. Make a resolution to lose weight with Nutrisystem for Men, just like Mully from the morning show. He lost some weight over the past 3 months. Join today. When you buy your first month of food, you'll get a month absolutely free. Go to Nutrisystem.com/radio to get started. We want to get our first sort of live look into some of the NHL trade discussions.
Yes.
Because when we get done at 2 o'clock today, and yes, 2 o'clock today, we're also the Lawrence Holmes show. When we get done, we're going to be at the deadline, and maybe the Blackhawks will have made some moves. So we're going to touch base with Jay Zawoski. He's been monitoring on his hockey Twitter all of the Americans and Canadians with all the information out there. So we'll get you the latest in just a second on the score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Live with no regrets, Keys.
Before we get to a little update on the hockey hot stove, I want to remind everybody that Thursday night is poker. That we are back with the 2020 Charity Poker Championship, all proceeds benefiting Camp One Step by Children's Oncology Services. This is that time when you lazy poker people yes. always wait until the final few days to get that room filled up. I think we have just a handful of high roller seats that remain, but we've got a big room. We should be able to accommodate all numbers. But if you're going to do this, do not wait. It's so much easier to get all of your stuff in, get all the paperwork done, get your credit card information in there, because we've got professional people running this in the room to streamline all of the banking. So all of the rebuys and the add-ons and everything that we do, it's all going to be virtual and done with just a tap and a click. You're not going to have to get up and go to the bank, and there's not going to be a whole lot of paperwork involved. We're going paperless on this, but we do this by making sure that you've looked everything over and you've literally clicked on what you need to click on. You have to go to camponestep.org. It's right there on the main page. You click right to Charity Poker Championship. Come play and come have a great night and eat and drink and maybe earn your spot in the World Series of Poker.
Let me ask you a question about this, though. Let's say you're a moderate poker player, but really are just interested in giving money to Camp One Step to help send kids to camp, right?
Well, you can always just click the donate button.
Well, I could do that, but if I want to go and hang out and I've been told tales of a fine evening with tons of fun and a hell of an MC, I could just pay the $75 for a spectator ticket to go hang out, have a good time, and be part of the event.
Correct. A big room, all the food you can eat and all the full bar, top shelf liquor you can drink.
Wonderful.
So that's all right there.
Sounds like my speed.
If we have to put you in an Uber or put you in a Lyft and send you away, we will.
You got all fours in a cab like Krause on the way to a basketball game.
We will do that. But we want people to come play. And even don't be intimidated by serious players, because very silly players have won this tournament. And in the way it's structured, the way the blind levels are, you're not out of it until you're out of it. There's all kinds of chances for rebuys. So we've had some dramatic finishes before with people winning on the river, and
nice.
Yeah, there's been some really last time we did it was really dramatic, but it's fun stuff. It's a great night, and most importantly, we can help kids with cancer and leukemia and send them to these great programs. That way we never have to say no when we're working with more and more hospitals all throughout the Midwest now, into Michigan, Indiana, Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois. We're one of the top pediatric cancer camping programs anywhere on this planet, and to serve any kid, no matter their level of need, no matter their condition. We have to get the best medical teams, so an adaptive equipment. This is the night when we do it. Come play poker, camponestep.org.
It's Thursday night. I'm looking forward to it. This will be our first of two hits with our guy Jay Zawoski in the upcoming NHL trade deadline. We get to do two today because we're doing the Lawrence Holmes show this afternoon as well. We're going to be on from noon until 2. Jay, what is shaking as we get closer and closer to the 2 o'clock deadline? And do you expect, as has been the case the last couple of years, for a lot of trades to trickle in after the 2 o'clock deadline?
Yeah, that always happens every year. I don't know how that will affect the Blackhawks. For what it's worth, Stan Bowman is scheduled to talk at 2 o'clock, you know, ish, which is kind of the policy all the time. Every GM talks once the trade deadline expires. I would expect Erik Gustafsson to be traded. I know the team has multiple offers on the table. They're probably weighing them. They're probably changing moment by moment as other guys get traded around the league. One interesting note, though, for the Hawks, Chris Kreider, who is one of the top guys available today, he's a New York Ranger. He reached an extension with the Rangers, so he's not going to be traded. So that could throw Brandon Saad into the mix for some things, because now one fewer high-end forward is available that everyone was expecting to be available. So that could up Brandon Saad's trade value. If the Hawks like what they hear for Brandon Saad, they can certainly move him today. Now, that's going to make them a worse team. There's no doubt about it. But they've got some money they have to move this offseason. The ability to do that maybe allows them to bring back somebody like Robin Lehner in the summer if they don't trade him today. But that's an interesting sort of quirk.
What if they do trade him today? They could still bring him back, right?
They could, but the part of the belief would be if he gets away from you, let's say they trade him to Carolina or somebody like that, a team looking for a goalie, and he falls in love with the city or the city falls in love with him and they just re-sign him before you have a chance, that could be a dangerous risk to take. So I would say this. If Robin Lehner is not traded today, I would read into the fact that the Hawks believe they can get a deal done with him before he reaches free agency on July 1st.
Is not trading one goaltender failure from your perspective?
Yes. I would think if they're going to keep Robin Lehner, they should try to trade Corey Crawford. You've got to maximize a return for your assets here. But I do, again, if they think they're going to re-sign Lehner, then go ahead and keep him. But he's also your biggest asset right now, as far as a trade return would go. So it's tough. I don't really envy Stan Bowman's position today, because he could think, yeah, I'm going to be able to re-sign Robin Lehner. Things can go south, and he can lose him for nothing. And that's the fear. Do you risk not signing him? Maybe they're working to sign him right now. Maybe that could be what's happening.
Because Kreider got his extension.
Right.
Maybe that is that sort of artificial leverage. That's timing and deadlines like this do force hands. And
sure.
Like you said, this could be another issue of a non-moving part.
Yeah, Robin, you like it here. We love you. But, you know, we got to do the best thing for our team. Just go ahead and sign this extension or else it's going to be someplace you don't pick.
Then you trade Corey Crawford.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and here's the thing. And look, as much as everybody loves Robin Lehner and as great as he's been this year, the rumor is he's asking for between $8 and $9 million and beyond 5 years. That's a really tough commitment for the Hawks to make, especially with Kane and Taze both making $10.5 million. Those guys aren't going anywhere. You've got $30 million and tied up in three players. That's not a formula to win. So you may have to reconsider what you're going to do at goalie. And look, maybe you bring Corey Crawford back for 2 more years. He's played awesome lately. He's been the better goalie between the two over the last month. He's the second or third best goalie in your franchise's history. And if you don't believe me there, look it up. Huh. He's on top of every Blackhawks record there is. And they're not just counting stats. So maybe that's the answer. Reese, maybe you announce an extension with Crawford and trade Lehner. I don't know. There's so many possibilities today.
Crawford's 35, though.
I know, but he's playing at a high level. And you've got, look, Duncan Keith is 36.
Trade him, too.
But see, they won't. That's the difference. Yes, they probably should consider all these things. Total, flat out, 100%.
And Kane and Taves.
I was just going to say, are Kane and Taves part of all these things?
To me, they would be part of the conversation. If someone's going to give you a franchise-changing prospect, you deal with it, you suck for 2 or 3 years, and then you get better with a core of Doc, DeBrincat, Boqvist, Strom, and go from there. But the Hawks, I don't think, are willing to do that. I think they think that's going to hurt attendance. They're probably right in that thinking. But the fear is if they don't do that, they become the Detroit Red Wings, who are historically awful.
Chances, only because I know it's going to come on the text line and on Twitter as well, chances of a franchise piece like that, I'm talking Keith, I'm talking Taves, I'm talking Kane, you know, a franchise piece getting moved, are what to you at this point?
Slim to none.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, especially Kane, especially Taves.
Whereas Crawford is more of a 50-50 proposition? Yeah,
I would say lower than that, maybe 30-70.
Okay.
But this Robin Leonard thing, that throws a wrench into everything. If they can get him re-signed today somehow, or if they think they can get it done before this summer, maybe that changes. That Leonard is the huge thing in all of this. They've got to know what he wants, what he's willing to sign for, and what they're willing to commit. Everybody wants Robin Leonard back. He's been awesome this year. But overpaying for one player costs you big time, and they've got to be smart about how they spend.
He's awesome, and he's great television, too, not just because of the style, the sort of hair on fire
but that goaltending
style, and the fact that he screams at his teammates. I mean, he's a very, very interesting guy who plays a relatively unconventional goaltending style that is I'm always here for. Then again, I made Marty Turco bad.
I just want to add one thing, though. As this trade deadline has approached and Robin Leonard's name was started to be, you know, floating out there on rumors, his play has gone down. It has definitely affected him. And say what you want about him versus Corey Crawford right now, Crawford has never let that stuff get to him. Mm. He's never let national criticism get to him. He just puts his head down and goes about his job. So I think there's something to be said for that. Leonard is absolutely being affected. He said so. It's not my words. It's his. These trade talks have affected him, and it's affected his play. So it's something to consider. Are you going to pay a guy like that $9 million for 5 or 6 years if some trade chatter gets him off his game that much? That's something you have to consider.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Fan 4-Pack is a fantastic way to enjoy Chicago Wolves hockey. It's 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 sodas, and 1 large popcorn for 1 low price. To get yours, visit ChicagoWolves.com. The Midday Midway is coming up, even though it's not the midway of this show for today and tomorrow. We're going until 2. I have what might be the most significant archaeological discovery ever.
Ever?
And I'm not kidding. I also have Daredevil or Dumbass.
Oh, wow. Okay, I would have thought I saw this in the news, but I'm looking forward to it. I had an experience in Minneapolis that's going to, we're going to have to talk about it with the I'm Fat podcast. I had an original of something that I hadn't had before. The Midday Midway is on the way, an extended version of Bernstein and McKnight here on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The Midday Midway, usually the halfway point of the show approximately, not in this case when we go until 2 o'clock, both today and tomorrow, as we are also the Lawrence Holmes Show. But we started out by talking about the Marquee Network, kind of what matters, what doesn't. I think it's hilarious that we continue to say, well, this was good and this, it doesn't matter, really. They've got the games. If you want to watch Cubs baseball, that's where you go, and yeah, it doesn't matter what you think about it.
We'll still be doing what it looked like and whether we liked it or not, even while they're having the games on every single outlet. It's even when they fix it, we're still going to be yelling and screaming.
And it's a soft launch. This is not a hard launch. You're not starting with the regular season. You're kind of rolling out the menu a little bit, and I'm not surprised that this was sort of as glitchy as it was. What matters is whether or not they get the deal done with Comcast.
Yes.
What matters is then if they deliver on the promise of this giving the baseball team more financial resources to be as competitive as possible. That's what matters. We also had some in-depth basketball discussion about Coby White and what he is, about Jim Boylan versus Zach LaVine, and the absolute sort of British farce of the whole thing of you don't know what he means, you don't know what he thinks. Well, yeah, that's why you're having a meeting with him, because he's mad about this, and they say, well, this is just how I coach, and I've been told to keep doing this because this is what I do. Well, what you do is being lampooned across basketball.
So every year, thousands of hunters flock to apply for the coveted opportunity to hunt grizzly bears near the Bering Sea town of Nome, North Alaska. It's on the Seward Peninsula. Eddie Grasser, the wildlife conservation director from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, said Friday, February 21st, that officials normally receive thousands of applications for such licenses. And whoever wins, it's only ever by pure chance, the luck of the draw. The demand for licenses in the state is so fierce that periodic drawings for permits to hunt bear, caribou, moose, and other animals are held in various regions. And with regard to hunting bears, Donald Trump Jr. was given a permit to hunt Alaskan grizzly bear.
Go!
Go Bears!
What are the odds?
How did it happen? I don't know. How did it happen?
Do you remember the famous and idiotic daredevil Mike Hughes?
Remind me, Mike Hughes.
We talked about it early on in the show. There was some story about one of the stunts that Mike Hughes was trying to pull off. He's a rocketeer. He's a flat earther. He's a proud flat earther who said the only way that he could possibly be convinced that the Earth is round would be for him to get close to orbit to actually see the curvature of the Earth, because he doesn't believe it unless he sees it himself. Well, he's not going to get the chance.
Why?
Because he died in a rocket crash on Saturday. And if you if you watch it, the video is on TMZ. And I know the guy's dead, but take out the humanity for a moment. It's as close to a Warner Brothers cartoon as you're going to see.
Oh, no.
Because he's in this steam-powered rocket ship that he made and his friends decided to launch. And they said, like, you know, he died doing what he loved. Yes, hurtling to Earth at terminal velocity must be what he loves. So what happens is his rocket, it reminded me of Evel Knievel trying to jump Snake Canyon when I was a little kid. And I was a huge Evel Knievel head. Like, I dressed as him as Halloween.
Really? You were big into it?
Evel Knievel lunchbox. And when you're my age, he was a superhero.
Still have the outfit?
Wouldn't fit.
The leather and the tassels and everything?
Real-life superhero. And I remember the aborted Snake River jump, and that's what it looked like, almost the same angle of the rocket car. And he launches, and bad thing happened on launch. The parachute deployed, the parachute that's supposed to bring him down safely, it deployed, it shredded, it detached, it ceased to be.
That's no good.
Yet up he goes. High up above buildings, into the sky, above the desert. And he has no parachute. And the people on the ground know that he has no parachute. And he starts to turn earthward. And everyone's like, yeah.
Oh, no.
I don't know if he knew he didn't have a parachute. Well, eventually.
I figure you find out.
It is, you know, the Wile E. Coyote splat?
My favorite. And
with a little, the circular puff of dust.
Yep.
After he recognizes that there's no cliff under him. And then he is able to fall. That's what this was, and it's pretty glorious. If he went up about 570 meters into the air, 875 feet is what they're saying, and then down.
Do you think it was high enough for him to see up the curvature high, of the Earth?
Down hard.
What if his last moments were seeing the curvature of the Earth and realizing that
he was
the
wrong.
Earth isn't flat, and he was wrong.
I want to know about the whistle. Was there the whistle on the way down before you get the splat and the puff of smoke?
You know, I didn't have sound on...
Good whistle.
I didn't have sound on the video, but it was it's exactly as it was depicted by Chuck Jones.
Did he hold up a sign that said bye bye before?
Said, yikes.
Yikes. Yeah.
So I was in Minneapolis over the weekend, and many thanks to Will Perdue for holding it down on Friday. You guys had a fun show. I was driving around running some errands for my brother and sister-in-law up there and caught a lot of the show, especially the Tex Winter stories you guys were telling, which are just great. The guy's mad that he can't go to Denny's and use the senior citizen discount. Just fantastic. But we had a couple of minutes to go out for lunch. Have you and have members of the I'm Fat podcast participated in and or had the Twin Cities delicacy, the Juicy Lucy?
Sure.
Okay,
it's a burger with cheese inside.
Well, so apparently it is a double burger.
Yes.
With cheese.
Also known as burger.
But it had a double burger. But so you've got the patty on the inner side, the cheese in the middle, and then another patty. They're very specific about this. It's not just one patty. It is a double patty. Apparently there are other places in Minneapolis or St. Paul that do it somewhat differently.
The problem that I have is the hot cheese exploding.
Right.
And burning. Things.
So there's a place in Geneva that used to have Juicy Lucy on their menu, and then even though it said "be careful, this is hot," they had to take it off the menu because it was hot and people are dumb.
So this is why I bring it up. I'm at Matt's, the home of the original Juicy Lucy. We're sitting down for the burger, and they slap them down. I mean, it's no frills. It's just the burger, and it was pretty great. But the waitress looks at you and gives you this: "Listen, dumbass, it's hot. Don't eat it right away. Take your time." And I was just, that was the best part of the experience for me, is just having that burger being put in front of you and a real talking to from the waitress, mm-hmm. just saying, "No, listen, wait a minute. Eat some fries first," which are also basically molten lava, "but have some fries first, then go after the Juicy Lucy and enjoy yourself." And I'm not a big char burger guy.
You're a smashed,
griddled
burger.
I'm a smash patty kind of thing. Yeah, I like that whole approach. But the cheese inside of the Juicy Lucy played with the rest of the char on the burger. Right. Solid work. I highly recommend Matt's if you get up there.
This is from the Daily Star. High-tech radar scans of the area around Tutankhamun's tomb have revealed a mysterious secret chamber that experts believe could house the remains of Nefertiti.
Whoa!
The boy pharaoh's mother-in-law, Queen Nefertiti. Nefertiti and her husband, Akhenaten, led a religious revolution in Egypt in which the old gods were swept away in favor of a single sun god, Aten. After Akhenaten's death, she was believed to have ruled Egypt alone before Tutankhamun took the throne. There's a degree of mystery about her life and especially her death. More than once, mummies have been excavated that Egyptologists had believed to have been Nefertiti's body.
Okay.
In particular, there were two finds by a French archaeologist in 1898. They were known as the Elder Lady and the Younger Lady, thought to be candidates, but they've been discounted. But now they've put forward the idea that hidden doorways in the walls of the tomb lead to a secret chamber. Paintings on the walls of Tutankhamun's tomb contain coded messages that say Nefertiti lies beyond. Said if Nefertiti was buried as a pharaoh, it could be the biggest archaeological discovery ever.
Because she was buried as a pharaoh?
Because it's Nefertiti.
Okay.
The theory was raised in a paper in 2015, but it's only now that ground-penetrating radar scans have discovered what appears to be a corridor leading from Tut's tomb to a new and unexplored space beyond. They talked to Dr. Ray Johnson. You can call me Ray, or you can call me an Egyptologist at the University of Chicago. He described the discovery as tremendously exciting. He says, clearly, there is something on the other side of the north wall of the burial chamber. So this, stay tuned. This is a thing.
That's awesome.
And for those of us who were part of the initial tour of the Tutankhamun exhibit. King Tut. I'll never forget standing in the Field Museum in front of the famous burial mask, they're gleaming gold and lapis lazuli and learning about it. And just people were upset. It was a craze.
Your dad telling you, remember this, kid. Yeah. You watched Johnny Unitas play. Wait, no, wrong story.
No, King Tut was a craze. It was a big deal when it came to Chicago. And you know, we got all the books and I'm reading up on everything and mummification and removing the brain through the nose with a hook and all that
That's
stuff.
That's the part that gets every kid, right?
Yeah. You're like,
what? They cut the brain out through the where?
Cool. Yeah, but this would be a thing, so we will stay tuned.
That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. A lot of news in baseball over the weekend. The Astros have returned to play, and they're stealing signs again.
Literally.
Actually stealing signs. Fans have come with signs, ripping them apart for stealing signs of their own, and the Astros took those signs. We're going to talk with Ben Ryder, sports writer for Sports Illustrated. He's written a couple of books, one called Astro Ball, The New Way of Winning. Ben's talking about a new podcast that he's doing about the Astros, about their sign stealing, about the biggest story in baseball in recent memory. We'll talk with Ben next. Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.